Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game and is happy to confirm that no animals were harmed during the making of our last pod, despite what Finlay would have you believe. I'm Kevin Day, and the chuckling person in the background is Finlay's owner, Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, you sent me a photograph of Finlay. I've never seen a sadder looking dog in my life. If I didn't know that that dog was spoiled rotten and had wonky jumps and champagne flavoured snacks on a daily basis, I'd have been sending for the RSPCA, Kieran. I really would.
Yes, if he doesn't get his walk, Kevin, he does put his foot down, and he gets very arsey.
Well, technically, Kieran, if he doesn't get his walk, he doesn't put his foot down. I think you'll find. Just call me Chris Packer. Oh no, Chris Packer. Chris Packer was it? Chris Packer was a runner from this. Oh no, he was. Never mind. Chris Packer. It's news day, Kieran, and there's a lot of news to get through. But there's some breaking news. We're recording this on Wednesday evening, and in just an hour or so, the Tracy Crouch fan-led review is being published. It seems an odd time to publish it at 10 o'clock on a Wednesday night. Almost implies that it's bad news, but you've seen a preview copy, and I believe it's a hefty old document, Kieran.
Yes, I can't say anything precisely precisely now, but yes, 160 pages, an awful lot of hard work has gone into it. Tracy Crouch and her team have been very thorough. I think they've been very measured. And I suspect that the majority of fans will be in favour of what they hear and read over the next few days. And we're hoping to get Tracy back on the show to, because she's doing the rounds of all the TV and radio stations on Thursday morning, as are some of us. And but she'll be able to sort of just sit down, have a cuppa, have a bit of a more of a natter, and perhaps go into it in more detail than sort of the other 3 or 4 minutes you get on the local stations.
Well, the Evening Standard on the way home this evening, Kieran, which is London's local newspaper, speculating that it looks like there will be a fans' golden veto. There will be an independent director, and again, I wouldn't ask you to confirm that, Kieran, because this is an advanced copy, but it's. That's certainly a more in-depth document than I was expecting. I mean, that sounds like more than just the odd recommendation or so. That sounds like a pretty broad manifesto for football going forward.
Yes. I think it's looked at all aspects in terms of governance, distribution, fan involvement, protecting the game. And I think that was one of the things which came out from the interim report that Tracy was very keen to acknowledge the unique place that football plays in society in this country. And therefore it needs protecting from some of the people that have got more of a self-interest.
Yes, well, it's interesting that the Standard was implying that fans would be happier with it than club owners, which sounds to me like it's going in exactly the right direction. So obviously we'll talk more about that on Sunday, even though it's Questions Day. We'll devote a lot of time to what's come up in the document, as much time as is necessary. And then on next week's news, and then again, we will get Tracy Crouch, or we'll ask Tracy Crouch to come on and talk about it in more detail, because it's possibly one of the most important documents on the future of football that's been published in recent years. And talking of future, unfortunately, Kieran, to no one's surprise, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer doesn't have one at United. United have now spent quite a bit on sacking managers since Fergie left. And I, despite the fact I had a funeral on Monday, which was quite a jolly day, notwithstanding, I'm still laughing at the fact that there's several callers from Man United on several radio shows saying it was a terrible decision to get Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in, and what we need now is Roy Keane or Steve Bruce, which just shows you that there are some proper dimwit football fans out here, none of whom, of course, listen to The Price of Football. But United have spent a lot of money on sacking managers, haven't they, since Fergie went?
That's right. So the total now comes to just over £40 million. And remember, Sir Alex only retired in 2013. So first of all, it was David Moyes, and that was £4.9 million and could have been a lot worse. But I believe that there was a clause in his contract. He actually signed a 6-year contract David Moyes. So yeah, under normal circumstances, they would have had to pay up the whole amount. But there was a clause in the contract along the lines of, if Manchester United do not qualify for the Champions League, then they only have to pay him up 1 year's worth of money. Mm. So that was 4.9 million. Then we had Louis van Gaal, who was sacked. Was it the same day that he won the FA Cup?
Yeah.
So that's a bit classy from the Glazers. That was another 8.4. Mr. Mourinho, should we say, and his entourage got just shy of £20 million. And if the figures are to be believed, and we'll have to wait for United's next set of quarterly accounts to confirm this, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, £7.5 million. I've read some of the stories that if United had lost 2-1 on Saturday, he'd probably still be the manager now. Instead of 4-1. You know, that's the precarious nature of football. You know, and everybody says he's, you know, what a nice guy he is. Nice guy doesn't make you a good man manager necessarily. It doesn't mean that you're a bad manager, of course. I've worked for some really nice people. If you're being brutal, if you take a look at, you know, Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, you know, Thomas Tuchel, you listen to them speak after games, you look at the technical and the tactical parts of the way that they deliver their team, and they all gave the impression of being chess grandmasters, whereas, you know, I'm not trying to be nasty to the guy, but Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he sort of had that expression after a match that he'd just beaten his dad for the first time at Kaplunk and was delighted with himself, and he just wasn't at the same level, unfortunately.
But he scored in the Champions League final, Kieran, so obviously he's going to be a good manager. It's unfortunately, this is not a pod where talking about football is encouraged, bizarrely. But I think you're right. I think it's not just that they lost 4-1, it's the club that they lost 4-1 to, and the nature of the defeat. And Harry Maguire, God love him, causing the nation some hilarity by being sent off very quickly. And I noticed he didn't hold his hands to his ears as he was trudging off after the second yellow card. But, I mean, United are about to spend more money because they've made this bizarre announcement that they're appointing an interim manager until the end of this season and then looking for another manager. And some of the names being thrown about as interim manager are some of the top names in world football. So if you're getting them in as a temp, that's going to cost them a lot of money, isn't it?
It is. But you've got to couch that in the perspective of qualifying for the Champions League for a club of Manchester United's stature is worth the thick end of 50 million quid. So if a manager comes in, does a good job, but what happens now? They've got an interim manager in Michael Carrick. Well, he's won his first match. They've got Chelsea on this weekend. What happens if they turn Chelsea over? You know, where does that leave them? We teach management strategy and theory at university, and this is a football club that doesn't appear to have a strategy. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's Manchester United. It's a £500 million a year business, and it's a textbook way of how not to run things.
But also, Yosi, as we're now calling him, Kieran, don't think I didn't notice that, Kieran. So as a true wingman, I'm now telling everyone that's how you pronounce his name, Jose Mourinho. He did a half decent job, and he still got sacked. So it's very difficult to know what the parameters are for a club that size. And also, you talk a lot about the Glazers and dividends and shareholders and so on. But it strikes me that if it wasn't a normal business company, they would have been asked, well, not asked him, but questions would have been asked about their leadership, their management, their stewardship of the business a long time ago.
You're absolutely right. And the Glazers are insulated to a degree because they own 119 million shares in Manchester United, which carry 10 votes each. So even if the other shareholders are completely hacked off with their lack of acumen, the Glazers... Yeah, it's a bit like you and I are both old enough to remember trade union conferences going way back, where one bloke would stand there and says 2.5 million votes, and you go, what? And you can be as useless as you want. But I was looking at the numbers for Manchester United since the club listed on the New York Stock Exchange, and they have They have underperformed compared to the Dow Jones Index absolutely horrendously since the listing a few years ago. And as you rightly said, under normal circumstances, there would be dissent from shareholders. There would be somebody, you know, lobbing a few grenades at the AGM. But none of this is happening as far as the Glazers are concerned. I often... You can actually listen in when they have their quarterly results announcements, and I have a habit of just lurking in the background, and they just get a no grinning whatsoever, apart from people who you'd expect to be fairly professional financial investors turning into fanboys and saying, how many shirts have been sold with Cristiano Ronaldo's name on the back of it? That really is the lunacy of the industry.
Can we just establish here, Kieran, that you are lurking remotely? You're not actually in the back of the room. Because you're a big chap, Kieran. Lurking, yes. Lurking for you would be quite difficult. Still in the Premier League, Spurs have announced losses of £80 million. And in the current circumstances, I don't know whether that's good or bad, Kieran, to be perfectly honest. And appointing Mr. Conte is not going to help when it comes to losses in years going ahead, I would have thought.
Yeah, I think we've now become completely inoculated to some of the big numbers being reported by clubs. It's certainly Spurs' biggest ever losses. Now, by far. Wow. But there's an elephant in the room in the shape of last season. They had £2 million worth of gate receipts coming in from effectively just from one match compared to... £120 million in a non-COVID season.
Right.
And that had a material impact. That also significantly allowed them to reduce their cost base because they weren't using stewards. They had a lot of cost reductions in matches in terms of security, stewarding, catering, employment, and so on. But it's a big number. And I think some of the other issues were sort of causing eyebrows to be raised. They owe £850 million to lenders. But what they've done, I think this is where they've been really smart, is that they've managed to kick those loans down the road. And it's the equivalent of an interest-only mortgage for 30 years. So they don't actually have to repay that capital until 2051. And what they will do is that, you know, 10 years before it's due, they will go to the banks again and say, look, we keep paying the interest on the due date. Will you refinance the loan? And the banks will say, yeah. I mean, yeah, from a bank's point of view, if you're a good payer, then in terms of the interest, then why go and find yourself a new customer when you've got a good existing one? So that was fine in my view because they've got low interest rates. What did cause me to raise a slightly quizzical eyebrow, and this could be, you know, perhaps it's due to Daniel Levy's strategy in terms of when it comes to buy players, is that they owe other clubs £170 million in outstanding instalments on transfer fees. So they will say, well, we've been buying players, but you've been buying them on tick. And eventually, you know, it's a bit like if your strategy of enjoying life is to do it via a credit card. If you keep spending more and more money on your credit card, you reach a point where you can't spend any more. So I know Spurs fans will have seen, because I've been bombarded with questions about it. I did an article for one of the newspapers and said that they've got the capacity to spend a fortune on new players, should they so wish, but the fact that they've got significant creditors already is one thing which will perhaps act as a bit of an anchor.
I have to say, you do a very good Roger Moore style quizzical eyebrow, but nowhere near as good as either the Baroness or Ali, who could give masterclasses in both. That time we met in late summer in Brighton, it was just like you could put a musical score to her eyebrow. And it almost seemed like everything we said, Kieran, led to some kind of eyebrow angle. But, you know, it's almost like they hadn't heard those stories before. Where would we be? I think we may have to send Derby County something at the end of the year, and everything is going to help, I think.
Hopefully a BAFTA.
Well, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? And then with our permission to sell it and maybe pay some funds. I think you'll probably mention a sterling effort from Derby County fans this week, vis-a-vis some of the unpaid creditors, but the Derby County administrators have published their report.
Yes, well, it's not report, it's reports, because a football club should be a relatively straightforward corporate vehicle. And Derby County Football Club Limited, historically, has been fine. There was just one company there. Then along comes Mel Morris, and all of a sudden, one company is split into many, many more. We've got Sevco 5112. We've got Geller Law 203. We've got DCFC Academy Limited, and many others. And trying to work out what's going on there has been difficult. So the administrators have created reports for all of these companies. And in terms of what is owed, and I think these are sort of the key issues. First of all, we have what's referred to as secured creditors. Now, a secured creditor, under the rules that we have, normally has to be paid off 100% before the unsecured creditors, the people that supplied Mel Morris with goods and services in good faith.
Absolutely. Okay,
so these people have got to get 25% to avoid Derby County having another points deduction. So we've got Michael Dell's lending vehicle, MSD Holdings. That's in for 20 million quid. We've got other clubs are owed 8.4 million for transfers. We believe that is mainly tipped to Arsenal. HMRC are owed 28 million. So you stick that together, and that's 56 million quid. And in theory, that's going to be paid off 100%. And you go, well, nobody's going to pay that for a club which is going to be relegated. League One club that does not own its stadium. And then we come to the unsecured creditors. Many of these are local businesses. I'm aware of some people that have traded with other football clubs, and they said under normal circumstances we would not have given this business extended credit, but I'm a supporter of the club, and I gave it a bit of extra wiggle room, and now that's been slapped in their face. St John's Ambulance were owed £8,300, and as you rightly said, this is where the Derby County fans came in. Huge hats off to them. They, as soon as they saw that, they got crowdfunding, and they've covered that. You know, a magnificent effort from the Derby fans. There are other charities owed around about £3,600. It looks as if Mel Morris himself is owed £124 million. Now, whether he's going to insist on 25% of that, we're uncertain.
124 million, Kieran.
124 million. That's the amount on the director's loan account. Now, if he asks for a quarter of that on top of the 56 million that's owed to the secured creditors, we're talking la la land in terms of what a preferred bidder is going to buy. So,
Kieran, I'm sorry to interrupt, but people listening to this will want me to interrupt and say, this is why we're doing this. How can he be owed that money? It's his fault.
Yep, but what he's done, he has lent the club money, and then he has used that money, as well as money from taxpayers. Now, and I think in recent times, a lot of the money's been coming from not paying taxes. And people say, well, should we really care? Well, remember the employees, they've had the PAYE subtracted from their salaries, and that money has been used to pay off other things. So I think they're entitled to feel aggrieved, as are we. We're all taxpayers who have been stiff by this. If Mel Morris wants to run Derby County as an executive toy, and that's what Roman Abramovich does with Chelsea, and that's what many other owners do. We've got Farhad Moshiri at Everton. My team, Brighton, we wouldn't be anywhere without Tony Bloom's investment, but they keep putting the money in. They don't get bored and then turn the taps off, and there's never, and all of the bills are paid on time. Mel Morris had lent the club money to run, and that's why it was paying, £160 in wages for every £100 worth of revenue. Then he got bored. I think it's very indicative that he managed to find the time to go on radio stations to blame everybody apart from himself. He also tried to put himself in front of DCMS to explain that what happened at Derby was all of the fault of COVID and all of the fault of the EFL and nothing to do with him. Now, this is Mel Morris CBE, by the way, Commander of the British Empire. Yeah, and my arse. And he doesn't talk to staff. I've had contact from some staff at Derby County myself this week, saying things and telling stories, which I'm not going to repeat on this show. I don't think it's appropriate, but they don't reflect well. And just one other snippet, there could have been one more party on that list of creditors, because Derby County actually contacted me a week before they went into administration, offering me some work. Now, I turned it down because I felt I was conflicted. I do believe in being independent. But well, if they're
also, Kieran, you're not that good of a paintbrush, to be fair. So
that's right. Well, especially whitewash.
well played, sir.
But the fact that they were still trying to offer people work a week before going into administration. Now, it could have been a joke on their part because they knew what was going to happen and they thought, this is a way of stiffing one of our people who they consider to be a critic. I'm not a critic. I've tried to be objective in all of this.
Without putting you in too delicate a situation, because this is news I think Derby County fans will be surprised by. What are you able to provide details of? Were they asking you to massage figures? Were they asking you to look at ways out of this? Were they asking you to come up with solutions? They
were asking me to look at some of the numbers. I don't think there was anything Machiavellian, to be fair. And I won't say which senior member of the of the club was involved.
It just goes. I generally, as much as any Derby fan, yearn for the day when the next time we talk about them, as happened with Swindon, as happened with Wigan, that one day we will talk about them as, you know, being bought by responsible people. But in the meantime, it just shows again with the action of the fans that it's the fans and the staff who behave themselves with dignity throughout all this, the ones who get stiffed. And we're going to have to move on, Kieran, because I'll probably have to go outside and get another bottle of wine to calm myself down, which is not how it normally works. A better story, Kieran, is that the Premier League has announced additional COVID-19 related funding for clubs in EFL League 1 and 2.
Yes, this is a further £25 million worth of funding. I think this is on the back of the Premier League having some good news, which we'll come to later. It's also part of the ongoing politics. There's a bit of gunship diplomacy between the Premier League and the EFL. The EFL are getting fed up that the progress in talks with the Premier League in terms of issues such as the distribution of money, that progress seems to have stalled. Now, we don't know how much that's got to do with Gary Hoffman now leaving, but you can understand it from the EFL's point of view. So the Premier League can now come out with a big announcement. We're giving £25 million to the clubs in League 1 and 2. Now, those clubs are going to be grateful. Yeah, they're going to be grateful for any money from any source. And also, to give the Premier League some credit, didn't have to do it. So it has done. So it will help those clubs in the lower divisions hopefully an improved distribution model, both within the Premier League, between the Premier League and the EFL, and within the EFL, and also between the EFL and the National League, will come forth in due course.
Kieran, we've often talked about the way the Premier League works, and that, you know, that the Premier League is basically a conglomeration of the clubs that are in it in any given season, and this whole thing about the 14-vote majority. So will a club have come up with this idea and then it would have been voted on? Will the Premier League have just said, look, we think this is the right thing to do, and then put it quietly to clubs for a kind of thumbs up? Or is this the sort of thing that the Premier League as an institution can do off its own back?
No, it would have to be voted through. I mean, there are monthly meetings of chief executives of the Premier League, and Richard Masters and Gary Hoffman will be there, and other officials as well. And they will make recommendations, or it could be that an individual club chief executive or chairman or owner will put this forward as a suggestion for, you know, it will be on the agenda for the meeting.
Right, okay.
So that's the way it tends to operate. And it's an extra, it works out about an extra £500,000 per club. And I'm sure that money will be spent wisely.
Well, do you know what? I'm actually really pleased to hear that, Kieran. It's kind of a chink of light, in essentially a little ray of goodness, if there is such a thing, that the Premier League clubs have agreed to that. So that's all the Derby anger is still there, but it's dissipated slightly by that Premier League news and by the fact that it turns out I do have a bottle of wine in the fridge in my office. I don't know. In the kitchen together. Clubs in League One and two of them, Portsmouth and Rochdale, have issued new shares. Portsmouth have issued quite a lot of them.
Yeah, this is a surprise. I think some Portsmouth fans have been a bit disappointed with the new owners because we all hope that new owners are going to be sugar daddies and they're just going to say, hey, sugar mummies. And come in and say, here's a blank check, go and have some fun with it. And Michael Eisner has not proven to be such a person. I think he's been very cautious. But this is new shares. It's £5 million worth. And my understanding is that the money is going to be focused on infrastructure projects at Portsmouth. And that was certainly one of the problems the club had under a series of owners that treated Portsmouth Football Club as a glorified toxic pass the parcel, to owner. And of course, if you're doing that, if you're trying to flip it very quickly, the last thing you're going to do is to spend money on facilities. So that is good. I mean, I probably had my worst ever football experience at Portsmouth. They beat us 5-1. It was the away end was uncovered, pissed down for 90 minutes. Mark Hateley scored a hat trick, and then we were kept in by the police for half an hour after the ground. It was continuing to rain, and they all had their big capes that they used to wear those days, and they were chuckling away, singing 5-1 to us. And sometimes you've got to go and suck it up. And I thought, well, at least, because Portsmouth is quite a lively place.
It's quite often, Kieran, that London football fans or Southern football fans people will say, oh, going up north on a Tuesday night, it's like, that's one thing, but going to the island, as they call it, it's a robust place to go and watch football. You're quite right.
Yeah. And then the police, after half an hour, said, okay, we'll let you out now. They all went and jumped into their police vans, and we realised we've still got to walk to the station. And I've got the biggest kicking I've ever had. And I've been going to football for 50 years. Got absolutely, they were just waiting for us. And they were annoyed with the police more than us because, the Pompey vans had to wait in the rain to give us a kicking. So they really put their back into it.
Yeah, we shouldn't be laughing about this sort of thing, Kieran. But, younger fans need to know that's how things were back in the quotation marks, good old days, close quotation marks.
Yes. So that's Pompey. But also, I think there's some really good news coming out of Rochdale.
Great.
In the sense that they've had all of these struggles over the course of the summer, but they've now gone and issued around about 350,000 new shares to fans for £2 each. But it's not, I mean, the money helps, the money's great. But more importantly is that it reduces the proportion of Rochdale Football Club that is owned by Moreton House, this strange company. Nobody could quite work out their motives, but owned by the investor there was a guy down south who didn't seem to be a huge football fan. But I think his investment, if you issue more shares to everybody else apart from him, it dilutes his influence on the club, and that's got to be a positive. And to every Rochdale fan who's found a few quid here and there because they love their club and they bought into this scheme, hat doffed, just as it is doffed to those Derby County fans.
Yeah, and I feel we should point out, Kieran, that 99.9% of Portsmouth fans are as funny and generous as the fans of every other club. In particular, I remember one particular match of the day filmed at Portsmouth when I was with six Portsmouth fans in a pub, possibly for longer than we should have been, considering it was a professional engagement. But they refused to actually say the name Harry Redknapp. They wouldn't say it out loud. So they found various euphemisms, some of which were broadcast, all, and some of which weren't. Sandra's husband, Jamie's dad, Cockney, whatever. And also, I think we should point out, Kieran, that club owners can identify as either sugar mummy or daddy, as they wish.
Yes.
In these thankfully more enlightened times.
I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
You will remember, Kieran, and many of our regular listeners, and we love all of you, will remember that a couple of months ago we had a question from somebody on our Monday Questions pod about how much county FAs made by fining Sunday League footballers, basically, for yellow and red cards. And we couldn't actually find out the exact amount, but I speculated it wouldn't be much because, if memory served me, none of us ever paid the fine that we were sent. But it turns out we discovered that county FAs are actually making millions, Kieran, from fining amateur players.
Yes, this is work which has been done by the journalist Sam Cunningham. And I believe that there is now an admin fee. So you are given an automatic £12 if you've got a yellow, £45 if it's a red. And we're talking about amateur football. Yeah, amateur football run by volunteers, but also involves kids. So if you're an 11-year-old and you've done something which warrants a red card. Now, I used to referee kids football, and it takes a lot to get a yellow card in kids football, let alone a red. So you'd really have to go, because normally you just have a word with the manager and say, "Look, he's just get him off." But it is disturbing that based on Sam's figures, he estimates that around about £8 million a year is being generated from these yellow and red cards. But some of the county FAs, many of whom, whilst they are not for profit organisations, they themselves have executives who are on a decent wedge. Are not showing the numbers. Yeah, a few of them are. I think Essex County FA, that was one of the FAs, the county FAs that seemed very reluctant to disclose information. And somebody who was involved in football there tried to find it out, and he had to go and sign an NDA. And you're going, well, hold on, this is amateur sport. We should have transparency and openness and communication and governance and all of the things which, the reason why this show's still going is because we've found that we're not alone in having these views. But when the football associations themselves, who we've always traditionally thought are the good guys in football, necessarily think that some of the people connected to the professional game in terms of ownership and control are the good guys, but we'd expect the county FAs to be on the right side of the angels. They seem reluctant to give this information out as well, and I just urge them to do so. There's nothing wrong with being transparent. You will not get slaughtered for it. You're being open. You're being honest.
There are two things from that, Kieran. On a flippant note, if you were to fine the parents of amateur youth footballers for all their misdemeanors, you'd probably make a lot more money.
But yes.
I always assumed that I thought what county FA officials got out of it was a couple of tickets for the FA Cup. I had no idea that county FA officials, some of them, are being paid.
Well, I think, to be fair, most of the Blazers who we regard to as the Blazers, I think they do it either for the love of the game or, as you say, to get FA Cup final tickets. And I've got FA Cup final tickets as a referee in way back when as well. So it does it is actually one of the good things about English football. But I think some of the FAs do employ professionals who are getting rewarded for it. And that in itself is fine. You know, if they can run the football associations on a more professional basis, and therefore the net position is that there's a financial benefit to the local county FA, that's grand. But they still need to be open.
Mm. So you may say it's a good thing, Kieran, that you got tickets for an FA Cup final, but much as I love you, I'm going to say shame on you, Kieran Maguire, for getting taking the tickets out of two dedicated fans who couldn't get into an FA Cup final because you blew a whistle at a couple of kids' games on a Sunday. That's not right, is it?
I'm on the Paul Gascoigne red card. First FA Cup final as well. Absolutely cracking match.
Yeah, wasn't that the semi final? Was that the final?
No. So it was the final where, remember, he got injured, didn't he?
Gary Charles, yeah.
Gary Charles, yeah, that's right. Yeah, the Spurs won 2-1.
No, absolutely. Oh, yeah, because they beat Arsenal in the semi final, didn't they? Further up the scale, but with a slightly amateur, shambolic tinge to the story still, the National League may end its contract with New Balance early after the company failed to provide enough match balls, and it's not just the word balls that made me laugh there, Kieran, but there's a certain carry-on sitcom element to this story, isn't it? The one thing you'd expect a ball company to do is to provide balls.
Yes. So New Balance signed a deal with the National League. I think it was a 3-year deal for footballs and training kit, and there's not that much that goes into making a football, is there? You know, it's...
I wouldn't have thought so, no.
No.
A small child in Bangladesh with nimble fingers, maybe. I don't know. But
And by all accounts, from the very start, New Balance have struggled to deliver on time. It looks like a further 2,000 footballs are required for the remainder of the season. I'm going, 2,000 footballs? That seems a lot.
Yeah,
but I can
hear it in your voice. Say it, get it off your chest, Kieran. The universe won't be pleased until you say that's a lot of balls. If you don't, you'll wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning going, "Oh my God, I didn't say that." I had the one chance I've ever had to properly say it's a lot of balls without producer Guy telling me off, and I didn't do it. Take the chance, Kieran. Liberate yourself.
It's a nice round number as well. It's a nice round balls number.
That's my fault.
Yeah, we're almost at Christmas, and they have promised a delivery for December. And if they fail to make it, if they fail to deliver on time, it looks as if the National League are going to rip up the contract.
Wow.
And they're going to go on a ball hunt.
Okay. There'll be more of this balls to come, I imagine. Bye-bye, BAFTA, yet again. There's always the moment. That's it. That's this week's one, isn't it? You mentioned earlier, Kieran, that there'd been some good news for the Premier League, and looking briefly at the fact we've only got a couple of news stories left, this must be it. In the United States, NBC has retained the rights to show Premier League games for another 6 years. I mean, we talked about women's football selling their rights abroad and the confidence that showed in that as a dreadful word, product, but a six-year contract for the Premier League is a big show of confidence, isn't it, for that dreadful word product?
Yes. I think this went to two or three rounds in terms of negotiations with a series of broadcasters, which is great because it meant that the Premier League was able to let the interested parties bid up the price. It's gone for £2 billion, which is doubling the money compared to the last deal. Which is good news, of course, for Premier League clubs. They will get, by my estimation, you know, between around about £14 and £29 million a year each.
Wow.
And this is, you know, the international rights used to be distributed evenly between all 20 teams, which is great. But a few years ago, let's call them the Greedy Six, whatever you want to call them, the Big Six, they started making we're the driving force behind the interest in the Premier League, which nobody denies.
Yeah.
And therefore, if you don't give us a greater share of that money, then we're going to go off and form our own league, It's Super League. So this was one of the Super League threats that worked in their favour. So what is now happening is that any increase in distribution rights, only 50% of that is spread evenly, and the other 50% is going to go on where the clubs finish in the table, which is going to accelerate the gap between the top and the mid-tier and the mid-tier and the bottom of the Premier League, which I don't necessarily think is needed. You know, the gap's big enough already. But it is great news, and NBC have got both the English and the Spanish language versions of this.
Okay.
Audiences for Premier League matches are up 14% this year. They're averaging 609,000, and you might think, well, that doesn't sound too great, but you know, a normal Premier League game broadcast here in the UK, you know, the best games, the biggest games, normally only get around about 2 million here in the UK. So I think because it's on a subscription basis here. So those numbers are pretty decent. There's also a sort of a loop effect with the success of Ted Lasso. It has driven increases in interest. We don't talk about the program.
We've talked about this before, Kieran. Yeah. Yes. Okay. 600,000, for those of you who are new to the thing, Ted Lasso asked me to, not even audition, they asked me to play the part of myself, and then I didn't get it. Somebody else played the part of me. But 600,000, Kieran, that doesn't sound a lot, actually, for a country with a viewing audience the size of America. But I'm guessing advertising within that, they'll be selling a lot of beer and pizza ads within that, I would imagine.
Yes, so it's a really good demographic in two ways. First of all, it tends to be a younger audience with disposable income, but also from the perspective of the broadcasters, because the matches are taking place in UK time, it doesn't take audiences away from the NBA, the NFL, and so on.
You can have
a match at 3 o'clock and a match at 5 o'clock from the Premier League. And what we're now seeing is people going to the bars, getting to the bars in New York at 10 a.m. for a Premier League game, another one at midday, and by the time the American sports come on a bit later, they are absolutely rat-arsed. But they're still paying, and it works as sort of a seamless for both hospitality providers, you know, the restaurants and the bars and so on, but also for the broadcasters, because it gives them a product, horrible word, that they can spread over a longer period of time.
Yeah, and I understand from friends and family in America that the coverage is actually very good.
Yep.
And the pundits and the commentators are very good as well. Now, we singularly failed to get through the New Balance story without mentioning balls quite a lot. Let's see if we can get through this story about a South American country without using the word Brazilian too many times. And when I say we, Kieran, I mean you, because I'm not going to use it in the story. Rick Parry, oddly, has helped Brazilian clubs secure a prime, and that's clubs in Brazil, not as in a lot of clubs. He's helped Brazilian clubs secure a private equity funded breakaway league.
Yes, well, this is a proposed league, but what happens is the issue with football in Brazil is that the National Federation, the CBF, you know, and we've grown up with those letters, haven't we? Never quite knew what they meant. But yeah, we've always seen them proudly displayed on Brazilian shirts.
Arguably the best international shirt in the world, Kieran.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm there.
For our generation, yeah.
Has controlled the domestic club game as well. Now, if you think about here in the UK, we've got the Premier League, which is separate from the Football Association, and they do different things. The argument put forward by some of the clubs is that there is so much focus in Brazil on the national team by the National Federation that the domestic game has been left to wither on the vine, The clubs aren't making enough money, and it's poorly governed. So These proposals is that there are some US private equity companies, and I always get very twitchy as soon as the words private equity are mentioned in the context of sport, because all they're interested in doing is slashing costs, making the most of existing assets, and getting out of the places in due course as a rule. But it looks like they are willing to put in between $750 million and $1 billion to set up a prospective breakaway league. They say they want to do it with the blessing of the CBF, but sometimes, you know, that blessing can be a little bit distanced. We could see a new form of Brazilian club game, similar perhaps to the Premier League. Could it be similar to the Super League? We don't know the exact details, but by all accounts, all of the clubs are willing to sign up for this if they don't get what they want from the CBF.
Okay. Now, our penultimate story, Kieran, has a concept that you have explained to me before on air, but still there are three words I understand in this news story, and all of them are within the first half of the sentence. Barcelona have ended their partnership with non-fungible token marketplace Onyx.
Yes.
I recognise that chuckle you get so with that. Oh, he's an idiot, but I quite like him. He can read words off a page quite well. But bless him, he doesn't understand a grown-up talk.
Well, this is something which has come and gone very, very quickly indeed. Barcelona announced this deal with this company called Onyx early in November. And let's face it, it's only the 24th today. And this was for a series of, and I quote, digital collectibles, where you take ownership of a photograph or a piece of video which is linked to memorable moments in the club's history. And this is what a non-fungible token is. It's effectively saying that the club says you now have ownership to Lionel Messi's first goal in the European Cup final in 2009. And we're going to say that we're going to give you a certificate of ownership of that. And you get people going, well, hold on, I can watch that on YouTube anytime of the one. But you now officially own it. So it is magic beans. And there is a lot of skepticism in this. And I know, I think Rangers are trying something similar. Whether it's going to work or not, certainly these companies, they are trying to get legitimacy through football, and they don't like criticism. I've been invited to a match by one of these organizations because apparently I don't understand what they're trying to do. I think what they're trying to do is to make some money.
If anybody understands it, it should be me that gets invited, because I generally don't understand what's going on. Kieran, when you say they own it, and I'm sure I asked this before, they don't own it in any copyright sort of way, do they? It's not like me buying the Don Rogers' first goal for Palace against Everton and going, right, if anybody ever wants to use that on the big match we visited, they've got to come to me for the rights or permission to use it, is it?
That you're absolutely right. All that happens is that you are getting a certificate of the event. So, you know, let's say that Palace win the FA Cup this year, and you are given the shirt by the club of the guy that, you know, of the player that scored the winning goal, and a certificate of authenticity. Now, that's actually worth quite a lot.
And
you'd never resell it, I know, but if, you know, it would potentially be worth quite a lot of money.
It would annoy Ali, because I don't think Ali would like to be sleeping on the other side of that shirt for the rest of her life, which is what would happen. It would be, the shirt would be in the middle of the bed, I'd be clinging to one side and Ali would be clinging to the other. But
what they're trying to do with these NFTs is to do that on a digital basis. So in theory, you could sell an NFT for every goal of the season, or let somebody does a Cruyff turn, you could buy that, you know, they could sell you those 5 seconds. And you go, well, hold on, as you rightly said, anybody else can watch this. whenever they want on YouTube or you know, on the club's own website. So what exactly am I buying? You're buying the right to sell your certificate to somebody else. And provided there's another mug who's prepared to buy that certificate from you, then it has value. And that's how NFT works. It's a system of finding enough suckers to buy something, which is a digital viewpoint of a point in time.
And I think that is an official accounting term, is it? Another mug.
Yes.
Can our last story involves the ongoing civil war between UEFA and FIFA. And we've discussed the idea of the World Cup being held every 2 years and FIFA expanding their Club World Cup. And we speculated as to how much that would cost the major leagues in UEFA. And finally, you're able to put a ballpark figure on that.
Yes, because the leagues themselves and UEFA asked Deloitte and another firm of management consultants to say, okay, what's the score? And it's coming out as £6 billion a season. Huge sum of money. Around about, you know, about a quarter of all of the money made in European football could potentially go. And the reason for this is, if we're realistic, the only way that you could have a World Cup every 2 years and this expanded 24-team Club World Cup. Now, you know, you and I, we go to pubs, we talk to football fans from all clubs. When was the last time you heard any fan of any club, A, mention the Club World Cup, and then never. B, say, actually, I would be interested if it had three or four times as many teams in it. Yeah, it's complete nonsense from a fan perspective.
If there's no game on TV, if it's a Thursday night or a Thursday afternoon, and that game's on, then you'll go, "Oh, that's handy. Let's watch this." And no one's interested in it at all. Not even the fans of the big teams around Europe and around the world.
Yeah, but the only way that this can be fitted in within the existing fixture calendar is you're going to need smaller domestic leagues. So, okay, you're a Crystal Palace fan, I'm a Brighton fan, we're moving to a 16 or an 18 team Premier League. So, okay, Kevin, how are you better off by Palace playing 4 to 8 fewer fixtures domestically each season?
Yeah.
I can't work it out. And that goes the same.
Unless we're in a championship, in which case we'd pay more but with fewer crowds. Yes, yeah, of course. Yeah.
And if you're an ambitious team, you know, Villa, Leeds, Newcastle, Everton, West Ham, you know, all of those clubs, you go, well, how are we better off on the back of that?
Yeah.
And also, it looks as if these fixtures, many of them would be taking places at weekends for these expanded FIFA club competitions. So Premier League matches would have to move to midweek fixtures, which smaller crowds, more difficult if you've got kids, you know, all of it is bad news. So this is clearly part of the ongoing power struggle and money struggle between FIFA and UEFA. There's no doubt that Infantino and Severin are not big pals, and it's sort of gunship diplomacy between FIFA and UEFA. Mm.
Well, if you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to our always free-to-air pod, then please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball, and we'd be very grateful if you did do that. But if you didn't, we wouldn't mind at all, as long as you keep listening. And if you have a question you'd like answered on the show, and Monday is our questions day, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, thanks again, folks, for all your feedback. If you want to support the show, myself and Kevin, we don't quite understand how this works, but Producer Guy does. if you go on to that purple icon and you give us 5 stars on the Apple reviews, only takes a few seconds. It helps us in the charts, helps him to negotiate with guests. You know, we managed to get Meheta from the PFA. Yep. And you know, and one of the things that his team did, they say, well, actually, we don't quite know what this show is because it's two slightly confused blokes, but it does get high ratings. And that's partly due to the way that Apple's algorithm works. It doesn't matter what you say. So, you know, if you give us the 5 stars, you could say you would rather it was presented by Dame Helen Mirren and Ronaldinho. Now, I'd listen to that. I think that'd be a fascinating show than Us or Doris Day and Harry Maguire. You know, it really makes no difference, but it does help. Thank you.
Yes, Doris was, of course, one of my nicknames at school.
Yes, I can imagine.
Along with Middle Kev, because there was a Big Kev and there was a Little Kev, both of whom I envied greatly. I'd rather have been Little Kev than Middle Kev, but there you are. Or Doris, to be perfectly honest, but there you are. Yes, thank you for listening, everybody. We'll see you back on Monday. Have a lovely weekend.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.